Welcome to the Bringing Rural Back podcast, where we help you live a more prepared and sustainable life today so that you can have a better tomorrow no matter what. And I actually mean that. This is your host, Greg Carter, and today, this is episode number 10. And we're going to be talking about tips for helping you pick your forever homestead. I'm going to tell you right now, this one may turn into a series, so we're just going to get started with that. Some friends of mine who have a podcast have told me that apparently episode number 10 is a big deal. A lot of podcasts never make it to episode number 10, and that's kind of sad. I don't know if they run out of stuff to talk about. Good Lord, I'd never run out of things to talk about. I don't know if they lack the determination. I don't know what it is, but apparently having 10 episodes is a big deal. So I would like to just welcome you and go, hey, we've made it to our first milestone. Yeah. All right. So today's episode, like I said, we're going to be talking about tips for picking your forever homestead. Now, your forever homestead is a really big deal. We're talking about some place that you're expecting to hopefully raise a family, spend 40, 20, 40, 60 years at, and then when you go to the great beyond, you look out over your place and hopefully you'll be satisfied. So when you're searching for your forever homestead, there's a lot that's involved. There's a lot of emotions. There's a lot of thought process. There's a lot of compromise. There's so many things that are running through your head and that you're seeing and that you're doing and you're dreaming and you're hoping. Well, by taking some of these tips, it's going to help you take part of that emotion out from the beginning, because we'll talk about that in much better detail later. But you need to see things clearly when you're selecting your forever homestead. Now, I'm going to be honest with you. My wife and I, we have not found our forever homestead yet. But these are the methods. These are the things that we use to help us evaluate a property, eliminate a property. So I think you'll find this very beneficial. This same thing can be applied if you're trying to look at buying like bug out property, an evacuation property. So we're going to spend some time talking about it. Now, before you ever go out and look at any property at all, you need to write down some lists. Oh, Lord, lists. Lists are everywhere, okay? But this is going to help you have all of your thoughts kind of organized so that, you know, you walk out on a 10-acre piece of property and you look around and you're able to go, okay, it's got this, it's got that, it's got this, it's got that, it's got this other. It doesn't have this, it doesn't have that. Ooh, it doesn't have this. Okay, so the first list that I want you to make is your wish list. And this one applies to married couples, it applies to single people, it applies to families, it applies to everybody. You need to have these lists, okay? So a wish list is you list everything that you can think of that would be on your perfect homestead. Should include the amount of land, what percentages of what you want to be on that land, you know, its location, its agricultural zone, housing, whether or not you want housing on it, if you want housing, what type of housing. This should be your perfect homestead. Now, my list includes things like, this is my wish list, okay? Between 10 and 20 acres, a medium-sized, modest home, a woodlot that's at least one-tenth of the total property but not greater than a quarter. I'm serious. That's my perfect. Now, what that means is, if I'm looking at a 20-acre property, okay, it should have a minimum of 2 acres of woods, but a maximum of 5. That's for my perfect property. My perfect property would have a pond on it. Around 1/20th of the total amount of land. So if it's a 10-acre property that we're looking at, it would have about a half-acre pond. Moderately level, there's no such thing as truly level unless somebody's taken a bulldozer in there and done it, and you don't really want truly level at all. Or gently rolling hills. A good well. Within 20 miles of a small town. A pre-existing pasture and or large garden spot. And a decent barn. Now, I could keep going. I could keep going a really long time. Okay? But that gives you a good general idea of the type of things that you need to put on your wish list. It may take you a week to come up with your wish list. If you're married, your spouse needs to make this wish list too. Both of you need to do a wish list. Okay? Once you're both done, you need to swap lists and look them over. Okay? You're going to find a few things that are the same on both lists, and then you're going to find some things that may actually be absolute opposites. But that's okay. All right? This gives you an idea, a better idea, a more fuller understanding of what you and your spouse view as your perfect forever home or homestead. Okay? The next list I want you to build is your must-haves. Okay? Now, must-haves are your minimums. So, my list includes things like at least 5 acres. Reliable access to the property. Now, that's a big one. Okay? Several years ago, before my wife and I married, I looked at some property. I loved the property. That was a problem right off the bat. I loved the property. But there was no access to it. I would have had to have contacted 2 people who I did not know who were. I would have had to go to the courthouse, find out the owners of this property. I would have had to contact them and figure out a way to get an easement just to get to the property. It was landlocked. Now, it met a lot of my must-haves, but it did not have access. And I don't own a helicopter. And I don't know what these people were going to want from me in order to give me reliable access to this property. So when I found that out, I just passed and went on and didn't do it. Okay? At least 2 acres of cultivatable land. At least 4 miles outside of a small town. Not closer than 30 minutes from a large town or city. And must have, believe it or not, reliable high-speed internet. Once again, you and your spouse are going to do this. Now, when you compare these two, this list should be much smaller. If this list has all of the same things that you put on your wish list, you're being unfair. These are the things that it absolutely must have. Hopefully, when you and your spouse compare, there's not any fatal differences. Now, what's a fatal difference? Okay. If I did mine, and mine's not closer than 30 minutes to a large town, and my wife's list was not farther away than 15 minutes from a large town, that's a fatal difference. There's no way that we're going to be able to meet both of our must-haves.
You see what I'm saying? If my must-have is at least 5 acres and my wife's must-have is not more than 2, we've got an issue. So that'll hopefully you won't run into that situation, but it does occur. If that occurs, y'all don't need to be looking for land right now. Y'all need to be working on your relationship and trying to grow together and kind of create a mutual goal. I don't want either party to give in wholeheartedly to the other one. If that occurs, believe me, I've been there, done that, didn't even bother buying a t-shirt. Resentment will grow. Big time. Resentment will grow. Okay? All right. The final list that I want you to do is deal breakers. Now, deal breakers may sound like it's just like the must-haves, but it's not. It does include the things that the property has to have or it's a deal breaker, but it also includes things that if the property does have it, it's a deal breaker. Okay? Good example. Great example. Kudzu. If a property has too much kudzu, I'm not going to do it. I've had to fight it. I know what's involved with fighting it. I don't want to fight it. I don't want to put up with the garbage. Okay? Too rocky a soil. Now, I can deal with small rocks and stuff like that, but if you're out in the middle of what they're calling a pasture, and you take a little foldable shovel, I'll tell you about mine later, I'm sure, a little foldable shovel, and you dig down and you hit rock within 3 inches of the top of the soil, there's not a lot you can do with that. I mean, there's things that you can do with it, but it's going to take for flipping ever to fix it unless you have a lot of resources to dump into it. Okay? If we looked at land that was currently in being used as industrial agriculture land, No. Not going to do it. Okay? So your deal breakers is an equally important list to your must-haves. I mean, it's just as important. Okay? Because once you have this list, once you start talking to a real estate agent, you can go, okay, if it has any of these things, if it doesn't have any of these things, don't even show us the property. At all. All right? Now, here's something that doesn't apply if you're single, but if you're married or in a committed relationship, it's critical. Both you and your spouse have veto rights. So I'm going to tell you a story. Let's see, how long ago was it? 5 years, 6 years? 5 years, 6 years? Yeah, about 6 years. My wife and I, we're looking for some property. We still haven't, like I said, we still hadn't found our homestead, but we heard of a piece of property. It was affordable. It was something that we could have done. So we drove out to look at the place. It was 46 acres, which is way above my minimums. It was nice, rolling land, didn't have a pond, did have a creek. I mean, there were a lot of my must-haves, and there were several, well, all of my must-haves. All of my must-haves were there. Several of my wishes were there. And actually, none of my deal breakers. All right. Well, it had a big, beautiful old barn from the road. When I started going into it, that barn had been neglected so bad that I probably would have had to tear it completely down and rebuild it from the ground up. Now, it did have 2 wells on it. Loved the wells. It had 2 small homes on it. one small and, well, one small and one extra small, I guess you'd say. It wasn't a mini house, but it was really small. So we didn't like the way that either house was laid out, but as we were going through, one of them had an in the floor furnace. And we walked down the hall, and there's this gaping hole in the floor. Well, the owner kind of freaked out. I don't know if it was real or not, but anyway. So we got to going through, and somebody had broken in both of the homes and had stolen every bit of the copper that was easily accessible. They had stripped everything out. Now, I know it was some dope head that was getting some easy money. I know that's what it was. But that instantly called into question the safety of the community. Now, I could have made it work. It was far enough out for me. It was a good agricultural zone. Soils appeared real good. Cattle were being run on it at the time. I mean, I could have made it work. But my wife vetoed it, and that's fine. It didn't meet all of my desires, but she had that veto right. So that's important. Okay? Now, once you have all three of your lists, look at the lists. I pray to God on your behalf that there will be no fatal differences. Like I said, if there are fatal differences, now's not the time to look at land. Don't try to coerce your spouse into coming to exactly your viewpoint. I know that's hard. But baby, you don't understand. But honey, come on now. It's I'm really bullheaded. I'm honest about it. And if I've got my opinion locked in on something, it's hard to get me to change. But it doesn't help anybody if I try to force my wife to coming to my opinion. It doesn't help us for sure. And it doesn't help anybody else either. So you may, as you continue to grow, you may have to compromise some of your must-haves. You may find that you lose some of your deal breakers. I'm sorry, kudzu will forever be a deal breaker for me. I mean, unless it's 40 acres and kudzu's only like 1/10 of 1 acre. Even then, I don't know. All right. Next, be patient. If this is going to be your forever homestead, don't get in a hurry. Don't set yourself a deadline and say, I've got to have my homestead by next June. Don't do it. You'll mess up. You may have to look at 100 properties before you find the place. But don't be in a hurry. Be patient. Because once you've bought a place, especially with everything going the way it is right now with the economy, It's tough to get rid of a place and make a good profit on it right now. So just take your time. Be patient. Look. Nitpick if you have to. And I'm not, you know, it doesn't have Bermuda or whatever. Okay? If that's one of your must-haves, great. But you know, just take your time. All right. Next, know your budget. I promise you this one's critically important. Know your budget. How much money do you have on hand? If you're going to try to pay cash for a place, it's going to take you longer to hunt. Realize that. Realize that paying cash for a place has benefits over getting a mortgage, but getting a mortgage for a place has benefits over paying cash for a place. You know,
With a mortgage, you actually do get to count off your interest off on your taxes. Woo-hoo! Okay, I understand that and everything, and I understand the desire to pay something off in full, but it's gotten to where it's very difficult to do that. So know your budget. And I'm not just talking about what the bank is willing to loan you. With FHA out there and Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac and all of these other things, it's easy to get a loan for more than what you really need. So know what a realistic payment is, a realistic time frame, and have more money than just your down payment and your closing costs. Because you have no idea what surprise problems you're going to run into, what surprise expenses you're going to run into. So really know your budget. All right. Now, I'm not going to go into whether or not you need to get a mortgage or whether or not you need to try to pay cash or what anything like that. I'm just going to talk a little bit about financing, and then we're going to skip right over it because there are people who are way more qualified than I to be able to do that. And I may try to talk somebody into coming and answering some questions with us on a future podcast about financing land. But realize that an FHA loan, you know, you're only looking at 3 to 3.5% down, but it has to have a structure on it, or you have to start construction of a structure pretty quickly. You cannot use an FHA loan to buy open land without immediate plans to start construction. If you're going to try to buy open land and then build yourself slowly over time as you can afford it, that's not an option. Traditional mortgages are not an option most of the time. Around here, a open land loan is basically a commercial loan. It's a speculative loan. So your down payment goes from 3.5% for an FHA loan to a minimum of 10% up to a maximum of 50% of the total cost of the property. 50% of the cost of the property. Okay? So I want you to realize that the more you try to uncouple yourself from the system, the more you try to do it yourself, the more they're going to try to push you away and force you back. Well, either push you away or force you back into their system. Depends just on how determined you are. Now, there are alternative ways of financing. I know some folks that have done owner financing. Now, around here, owner financing is normally 10% down, and between 9.9 and 12% interest, and then they don't like to do the financing for more than 10 years. But if you're in a rock and a hard place and you can't get other loans other ways, and you can service the debt, that may be a viable option for you. If you're looking into doing owner financing, have an attorney read the contract. Do not sign anything until you have an attorney read the contract. Now, I'm going to tell you why. I know a couple. They've sold the same piece of property 3 times through owner financing. The way they had their contract written was if the people were 7 days late on a single payment, they could repossess the land. And they did. They did it twice. So all of the money that these people paid, all of the down payment, all of the payments that they made, they got to keep all of that money and got to keep their land. And they called the sheriff, and the sheriff had to evict these people. And was it crappy? Yes, it was crappy. All right. Well, the next person who bought from them, I guess, had heard the story about what they did to other people. They made about 4 payments on it, then got the money, paid them off, and it ticked those people off so bad because they wasn't going to be able to rip anybody else off with that same piece of property. So be very, very careful with owner financing. All right? I mean, that's a real story. That's not made up. I know where the property is. That's the real deal. Now, you can, if you are lucky enough, you can borrow against your retirement to help you purchase land or a home. The rules change or vary from, you know, retirement plan to retirement plan. You can borrow from your 401k. You can borrow from an IRA. You can do all these things, but most of those require you to pay yourself back. Now, you'd think that that means, well, if I can't pay myself back, that's okay. No, it doesn't. They come after you because you're taking money out of the system. They don't want you taking money out of the system. Even if it is your money, kind of wink, wink. They don't want you to do that. So, again, I hate to tell you this, accountant, tax attorney, in situations like this, they are your friend if you find a good one. Okay? Now, there, I know some folks, three folks, that have actually closed out their retirement account in order to buy land outright. Okay? Well, I understand it. I really do. But when you do that, you have to pay taxes and penalties on that money because you've taken money out of the system. Now, one of them was a Roth IRA, so when they closed it, I don't know how they did it. They had to talk to their accountant, too. When they closed it out, all they had to pay interest and penalties on was the interest because it was a after-tax contribution. But a regular IRA is a pre-tax contribution, which means you have to pay taxes and penalties on the whole lot. So be careful about that, okay? All right, that's enough on financing until we get somebody who'll know more about it. So, we've made our lists. We've talked about it. Maybe had to compromise. We've talked a little bit about financing. So, the next step is to get out there and start looking. Kinda. When you're making out your lists, you had in your mind a picture of what you wanted it to look like. Well, now that you got your list done and all like that, you need to have, what are your homesteading goals going to be? Okay, what are they going to be? You want to raise chickens? Chicken houses? Oh, please don't have industrial chicken houses. You going to have a vineyard, an orchard, whatever. Because those goals are going to determine the type of property that you're going to need. No timelines at all right now, folks. None at all. You're just creating this picture in your mind. So you're going to find you a real estate agent, most likely. You can just drive around the sticks and look for for sale signs, but there's a lot of property that's for sale that doesn't have for sale signs. Get your real estate agent, a good real estate agent. There's some of them out there. Tell them what you want. And if the first two pieces of property don't meet the criteria that you gave this real estate agent, fire them and get another. Because if they're not willing to listen to you, then they're not going to be able to help you the way you need helping. All right. Now you're going to start looking at properties. You should want to look at least five properties with a critical eye. Now, I know it's hard. Don't get emotionally attached to any of the properties. Now, here's the thing. If a person knows what they're doing trying to sell a property, especially this time of year, you know, we're getting into the fall when I'm recording this. You know, if I'm wanting to sell a piece of property right now that's got a little bitty home on it, then one, I'm going to make sure the place is clean. That's always a good thing. But two, right now I would have fall decorations up. I'd have little scarecrows and mums and all of these things. And that, oh, that's so pretty. Oh, I could decorate this. Oh, and I'm not just talking about the ladies. I'm talking about the guys too, okay? You know, the guy has a little workshop out back, and he walks you out there to show you the workshop, and it's got pegboard on the walls, and he's got all of his tools perfectly lined up and all this stuff. And you're thinking, man, I can build anything in here, okay? A person who's trying to sell a property and knows how to do it, the little small things, the things that make you feel like, yes, I could make this a home, will start developing an emotional attachment to a place one over the other. You can't do that. Stick to your lists. And when you leave, Google Earth is a wonderful thing. You talk to your spouse about it. Sorry. You talk to your spouse about it. And then you take it. You look at it on Google Maps. A lot of counties will actually have like a tax map that'll have the outline of the property. And I know our county, you can print off that map with the outline. That gives you a way, and you can look at it, and you can see, okay, the trees are over here, the pond's here, the house is here, da-da-da-da-da-da. Well, see, I want you right then to start developing a plan for that piece of property. Now, I told you not to get emotionally attached, and I meant it. Because I'm hoping that you're going to develop plans for at least three pieces of property. And you're going to go, okay, fruit trees right here, grapevines right here, da-da-da-da, chickens, whatever, pigs, whatever. And you're going to design your plan for that property. And then you're going to see if that property will actually work for you. Now, you're not going to know 100%. I mean, you're just not, okay? I put fig trees at our place. I've got one in the front, and I put one in the back corner. I thought, hey, this would be a great place. Has enough sunlight. Da, 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 da. Well, the one in the front survived. The one in the back didn't. No idea why. They got the same amount of water. They got the same amount of sunlight. They got the same amount of everything. But the one in the back just couldn't make it. So, you know, you never know. I have seen apple trees planted 15 feet apart in a row, boom, 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 and one die, one live, one thrive, one just barely continue surviving. There's something about that individual piece of soil, just right where that plant is, that's either working great or not working at all. But I want you to develop a plan. See if it's even a possibility that it'll work for you. Because if it's not a possibility, you're going to want to pass. I mean, that's all there is to it. You're going to want to pass on it. Okay? So, once you've looked at the property, you've decided, you know, this one goes, this one stays, this one goes, this one stays. You've limited your selection down to three. Hopefully three. I would do no less than three, but no more than five for the final selection process. Once you get it down to three to five that's in the right price range, that you know you have financing for, or that you know that you have money to pay cash for, that will meet your spouse's minimum expectations, that will meet your minimum expectations, that fit everything that you have, doesn't meet all of your wish list, but got all of your must-haves, got all of your wife's must-haves, doesn't have any of your deal-breakers or your wife's deal-breakers, and I'm saying wife because I'm a guy, then you need to go back and visit each one of these things again. When you do that, take your shovel and dig around. If they're in the same county,
go to your county extension agent and ask about the soil. Now, I don't know how long it's been in our county, because I'm kind of new to the county that I live in now, since they've done a full soil survey. But the county that I was in before, I actually had where the U.S. Department, Army of Corps of Engineers, the Corps of Engineers, had done a complete soil sample of the entire county. And we were able to see, okay, this one's got this much clay, it's got this much loam, this is was the acidity level when they did the survey. Now, I'm going to be honest, the survey was like in the 50s. But it's still going to give you a good understanding of what the soil's like, because unless it's been seriously abused or removed, now a lot of it has been abused, but your basic components are going to be the same. But you go out there with your shovel, you find out how deep. If it's over a foot and a half deep, fill the hole back up, move somewhere else. You're going to look at the way the sun hits. You're going to look at everything. And you just, once you get to this point, especially if you're at five, if you're at five potential properties, I want you to go an additional step and then cut it down to two or three. If you're at three, you don't have to go any further. Make your decision and go with it. Okay? So, set your goals. Make your lists. You know, find your financing. Don't even look at a single piece of property. Please don't look at a piece of property until you've done these things. Don't do it. I'm serious. If you have any questions, now the next part in this series, it is going to turn into a series because I just looked and saw what time it was. The next part is going to be mistakes to avoid on your brand new homestead. If you enjoyed this podcast, share it with somebody. It means the world to me. I'm serious. Share it on social media. Email it to somebody. Tell a friend about it. That's the way that we grow. Now, if you want to give us a review on Stitcher or iTunes, they're greatly appreciated too. They'll help us some. I love it. I appreciate it. I'm not going to tell you what to review me. If you think we're worth 4 stars, great. If you think we're worth 5 stars, outstanding. Wow. If you think we're worth 1, that's what you have the right to do. I'm serious. Okay? So, but tell somebody about us if you're enjoying it. If you have any questions, send an email to TheRural, RURAL, economist@gmail.com. I will answer it. If you have any, you know, feedback on the show, suggestions, anything, send it to me. I promise you I'll answer it. So this is Greg for the Bringing Rural Back podcast. I hope you have a great day, and step by step, we're bringing rural back. Bye.